Good morning and welcome to Radio Rehab with Lisa Scythe, who is a professional private counselor with Integrity Psychological and Counseling Associates and an adjunct professor with the Social Work Department at USI. Radio Rehab is only a support to the real work of recovery and does not offer definitive answers or attempt to counsel anyone in their own personal behavior. Although the program does not endorse any program of recovery, it holds the belief that most recovery works are an effort of true conviction and concern of the benefit of the suffering and can be trusted to offer real hope and better choices. And now Radio Rehab with Lisa Scythe.
Good morning, everybody. It's good to be back on this Race for the Cure Saturday at Radio Rehab, and it seems appropriate that Race for the Cure is going on because we're racing for a cure with addictive disorders as well, and now we understand people with mental health and addictive disorders have an illness, a lot like, as Marvelline Prince says, a cancer. So we're glad to be here on Saturday always to open up to you and talk to you and share with you what we know, and allow you to send us questions and call us with other things you may want to know that we'll try to bring you. So we're going to do that again this Saturday, as every Saturday. Just a couple of announcements. Starting October 6th, in a couple of weeks, Radio Rehab will be at 10 o'clock in the morning instead of 11:30. So be sure and tune in at 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock. And it's still going to be 1400 AM, but Mr. Landers is also going FM. So it'll also be available on 98.5. So you can tune into Radio Rehab 98.5 or 1400 AM from 10 to 11 every Saturday. Well, you know I try to bring you guests that I think are interesting, compelling, and honest about where they've been and who they are, because that's what it takes to be in recovery from co-occurring disorders and addictive disorders. We got to believe that people are authentic, that they're honest, and that they have our best interest at heart. And my guest, I can't think of somebody better from a global, more meso, macro kind of environment to bring to you today and to bring into the addiction and co-occurring disorder world than Judge Keith Meyer from Warrick County. He has the heart and the head and the courage to do what has to be done from the bench and also at the state level where legislation and laws are being made. You know, Judge Meyer is at the front lines always, advocating for people to do more to help us with addictive disorders and co-occurring disorders. So we have him as a guest today to talk to us about him and who he is and his awesome drug court program in Warrick County. And he's got his director, Kevin Groves, who I've known all of his recovery life, and he is a man of integrity and authenticity and has great recovery, is a great manager for the drug court program, and I know he and Judge Meyer are jump-starting Warrick County and offering them help and healing and hope every single day. So I know you're going to like hearing them, what they're doing now, where they plan to go, and don't hesitate to call 424-1400. Ask any questions you want to. We've had some mail-in questions that we'll get to later, but without anything further, I'm going to go ahead and introduce you to a man that I admire beyond belief, one of my heroes, Judge Meyer. Thank you for coming, Judge.
Good morning,
Good
Lisa,
morning.
And thank you very much for having me again. I certainly enjoy the opportunity to come on the show and talk about this topic that unfortunately affects most people, either directly or indirectly. There's very few families that don't have someone in the family that suffer from some sort of addiction. Mm-hmm. It might not be drugs or alcohol, but some sort of addiction, because mm-hmm. addictive personalities seem to be quite prevalent today. And maybe they were 100 years ago. I wasn't. I'm getting old, but I'm not quite that old yet. So it is a problem, and it's always good to address the topic.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Kevin, you're the new director.
Hi, Lisa.
Well, not new anymore, but...
Lisa, I just want to take a moment to thank you for having us on the show today. And My name is Kevin Groves. I'm the director of the drug court in Ward County. I'm also a product of a drug court. I'm a drug court graduate myself. I graduated from Judge Trockman's drug court in 2005 and have been in recovery for over 8 years this time. So, again, Lisa, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So people may call in. Don't hesitate to do that. But I'd like to just first kick it off asking Judge Meyer and you too, Kevin, what made you want to deal with such a complex, difficult, not a 9-to-5 kind of job as a judge or as an attorney?
Well, when I got out of law school, my first job after law school was as a legal advisor for the Evansville Police Department, and also worked with Vandenberg County Sheriff's Department, the local federal agencies. And that was in the late 70s, and drugs were prevalent then, and it was a problem. You know, we struggled with ways to deal with it. After that, I was public defender for a number of years in Warrick County, again dealing with that and other criminal issues. Then I joined the prosecutor staff and dealt with the issues again, but from the different side of the table, and then on the bench. And you know what I saw over the almost 30 years before I took the bench was the futility of a lot of what we were doing with the people that had addiction problems. It was becoming very much a revolving door with these people. We weren't really seeing systemic changes. You know, occasionally you would see a defendant who was able to deal with their addiction, but that, I'm not so sure that was purposeful, that result was purposeful. We were very much in the revolving door of dealing with these people. And I thought, you know, there ought to be a better way. And what really got my attention was the drug court movement that was springing up throughout the United States since 1989. And with that, getting larger and larger and more organized, I thought, you know, that would be something that would be worth trying. And that was one of the first things I started working on after I got on the bench. Of course, it took about 5 years to be able to get it set up and get it staffed. It is a daunting task to supervise a drug court. It is a daunting task for Kevin to manage it on a day-to-day basis. Not only with the different personalities of the people that are in the program, but all the administrative things that you have to deal with. But it is very rewarding because you see these people that families and the judicial system, and prosecutors, public defenders, and the community is basically given up on. And, you know, the community, and this has changed a lot. The community perception of the addiction issues, I think, has changed significantly over the last probably 10 years.
Well, I think you've made that happen in Warrick County. Remember all the lunch and learns? And you got to educate people. It doesn't come to them naturally to think this is an illness.
You do. And, you know, for families that have a person with an addiction in the family, they usually don't know how to deal with it. And when you don't understand something, it's fairly easy and maybe natural to shy away from it, pretend it doesn't exist. And I think that's what happens a lot. But with all of the shows that have been on TV about addiction and drugs and the different reality shows that have been on, I think the general population is getting a better understanding of the issues. And I think they are trying to understand it.
I think you're right.
I think a significant change has been in the public's willingness to treat this problem in a clinical sort of way instead of a criminal justice sort of way, which is big, because locking someone up, well, let me backtrack a minute. Very generally, as a judge, when people come before you in a criminal case, you kind of categorize in your mind, you know, is this a person that is dangerous, you know, probably needs to be in prison, or is this a person that is just doing stupid things, maybe not for stupid reasons, maybe because their addiction, but, you know, the people that are dangerous, you know, society needs some protection from them. But fortunately, at least in Warwick County, and I'm not sure every jurisdiction can say this, but we don't have that many truly dangerous people. We have a lot of people in the other group that you get mad at because they keep doing the dumb things. And those are the people that you can help if you're willing to try to help them. And that's what the drug court does, and we've really been successful. I mean, we have taken people that have had been in and out of the criminal justice system for years, or maybe they were fortunate enough not to have entered the criminal justice system, but they have been addicted and actively using for 30 years before they first got caught. And, you know, they're able to get over, not necessarily over the addiction, they'll always have that, but they manage it properly at this
right.
point.
Keep it in remission.
And, you know, that's been the most rewarding aspect of being a judge over a drug court program, is seeing those people, because so many of these people are, they're not bad people, they're good people, they just have a bad problem, a bad disease. And that's unfortunate, and it's not a situation where they ask for the disease.
Right, right.
You know, they got it either from their environment or through heredity. And, you know, I feel sorry for them that they have that, you know, as I would with anyone that's got a congenital or chronic illness.
Right. You know, one thing, too, that you did... that was new. You made it also a DUI program, and you were just the third in the state that were willing to deal with the drunks. Were you? Did you know that that was going to be a bigger challenge because of the drunk driving issue, or what made you decide to bring drunks in as well as addicts?
Well, the problem of impaired driving is significant.
Yeah.
If you read the statistics, and heavens knows there's a lot of statistics about this, but, you know, a year or two ago, one of the universities put out a study that said one in every 10 vehicles on the road is being driven by an impaired driver. And you think, well, I'm going down the, for example, Lloyd Expressway, I've just passed 10 cars, you know, one of those was impaired, or maybe it was the person thinking about it. And it's a big problem. And it's not just the drunk driver. I mean, there's people out there that are, although maybe legally medicated or over-medicated, or maybe they're using an illegal substance and they're operating a vehicle. And the ironic thing about that is that there seems to be such an emphasis upon the alcohol-impaired driver and not much emphasis on the the drug-impaired driver.
Right.
And they are just as dangerous, if not more so. And, you know, realizing that, I thought, well, you know, we would try it. And we added the drunk driving component. I think we were... like number 69 in the country.
Yeah, that third had, in the state.
That had a drunk driving drug court. And I think we've been successful.
Definitely.
And it helps it is a better approach than incarcerating the people.
Absolutely, and I'm so glad you see it that way, Judge. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We've got a great discussion going with Judge Meyer and Kevin from Warrick County. We'll be right back.
Passionate, professional, effective treatment. Our goal is to help get you back feeling healthy and happy once again. Call us today at 812-858-7200 for a free evaluation. This may be one of the most important calls you'll ever make.
If you are suffering from depression or anxiety, please listen to this important message. You are not alone and there is help, real help. Brentwood Meadows is here. Brentwood Meadows is a new state-of-the-art facility located in a private setting in Newburgh, Indiana. At Brentwood Meadows, we understand that feelings of anxiety, loss of control, loneliness, fear, and confusion affect your life and the lives of those around you. Take control. Call Brentwood Meadows for a free, no-obligation evaluation. Call 812-858-7200.
It's your last big chance to save at Ashley Furniture Home Store's big event in Evansville. Enjoy big savings. Get buy one, get one half off savings. Buy the DuraBlend Cafe Sofa and get the matching Love Seat for half off. Or take advantage of up to 5 years no interest. Every bedroom, living room, and dining room is marked down this week. Absolutely everything on sale. These big buy one, get one half off specials end Sunday. Hurry to Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Labor Day on A&E.
What the hell's going on here?
Start compression. He's arresting.
From executive producers Tony and Ridley Scott, A&E presents Coma.
He did not go into a coma because of some reaction.
Don't let them put you under.
This is human sacrifice.
That's exactly the right word. Coma, a two-night television event. Labor Day at 9, 8 central on A&E.
They're not really alive. Not dead either.
In the 30 seconds you'll listen to this radio ad, you could crack open a delicious Pepsi and log on to an epic celebration of the 25th anniversary of Michael Jackson's Bad.
Woo!
You could call up your friends.
Who?
It's Michelle, dude.
And rock out to the King of Pop with performances from some of today's hottest artists live via Twitter. In this 30 seconds, you didn't do any of that. But you can August 29th when Pepsi Billboard Summer Beats celebrates Michael Jackson's Bad 25. Join the event at twitter.com/Pepsi. Pepsi, live for now. Look for Michael Jackson's Bad 25 out September 18th.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, a dynamic program for those who have been touched by alcohol and or substance abuse. Our lines are always open, so pick up the phone right now and call into the program at 424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab is brought to you by Brentwood Meadows. Brentwood Meadows, there's hope, there's help. And now, here's Lisa.
Yeah, that's true. Look what happened. Oh, I think we're back. I just said, be careful what we say. The politicians get in trouble when they're off air on the microphone. So we're back with Judge Meyer. Kevin, just another reminder, if you're just tuning in, Radio Rehab will be from 10 to 11 starting on October 6th. And we're talking to the judge, and during break, just talking about the difference between prison and treatment and compliance versus surrendering to your addiction. So, Judge Meyer, keep going where you were going with that.
Well, I think most people understand the severe financial problems that all levels of government are having, especially in the last several years, and it's getting worse instead of better. And it costs a great deal of money to house an inmate. The most recent figure I have from the Indiana Department of Corrections is it's around almost $20,000 a year to house an inmate at the Indiana Department of Corrections. Some other states are higher than
that. But you say that's if they're healthy.
And that's if they're healthy. If you get an older inmate, maybe around 60, who has some health issues, you know, the cost could be $30,000 or $40,000 a year to house them. And you know, you got to think, and Department of Corrections is really looking hard at this because they're having budget problems too. But you know, does this person really need to be in prison? And, you know, there is a study committee now looking to revamp the criminal code in Indiana. And hopefully, you know, some good positive changes will come out of that. But if you compare prison with treatment, the cost of treatment is substantially less. You know, if you house an inmate for a year and it costs you $20,000, you can probably get them through treatment for $4,000 or $5,000. Mm-hmm. You know, substantial savings, and in most cases, you'll get a positive result. I think, as most people realize, putting a person in prison, you don't often get a positive result. I mean, with recidivism rates around 70 or 80%, that's not too positive. But what has happened is that so many people have gone to prison that are addicts, not necessarily criminals. They do criminal things because of their addiction, which is different than a criminal who also has an addiction problem.
Yeah.
You know, the criminal is the one that
they're going to be criminal anyway.
They're going to be criminal anyway, with or without the addiction. But the addict is only a criminal because of the addiction. Mm-hmm. And those people, when you put them in prison, and I've said this many times, if you put a person in with 500 or 1,000 other people 24/7 who have the same or worse problems than they are and expect them to come out better from that experience is really kind of defies logic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the old saying that one bad apple spoils the barrel, you know, there are a fair number of people in prison who are antisocial personality. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because you can put that one bad apple in a barrel and the whole barrel will come out bad. And that's what happens in prison. So a lot of these people go in prison and, you know, they come out worse. And the participants who have been through drug court and have been were in prison before that have told me that.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. They got worse being in prison. And, you know, it's not necessarily an abstinent society in prison. There are, unfortunately, drugs in prison. And the correctional institutions try hard, I think, to control that. But, you know, it's a cat and mouse game mm-hmm. all the time. And inmates say it's just a question of price. We have to pay more inside than we do outside, but we can still get it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're not getting a lot of abstinence.
Yeah. It's not a drug-free workplace.
No.
Necessarily.
No, unfortunately. And, you know, Kevin, having the addiction issue and having been in legal trouble and drug court can probably explain maybe what it's like from that perspective, being a person who is in drug court.
Did you get some slack for, Kevin, I want to definitely hear what you have to say, but did you get some slack from people for hiring people in recovery from addictions?
You know, I never did.
Good.
And I was really anticipating some flap about that, but the people up in Warwick County, God bless them all, they have understood. I have not received one negative comment, and I suspect there's probably somebody has
saying
a negative
something.
Thought, but I've never received it.
So I
think generally the feedback has been positive. And then, you know, my philosophy was, who better to know an addict than an addict?
Yeah, yeah.
So.
I think you're one of the only drug courts in the state that has so many recovering people as part of your team, as well as master's level social workers.
Well, I don't want everyone on the drug court team to be in recovery.
Right.
You know, I want a balance.
Sure.
But I certainly want people that are in recovery because they understand the subject matter far more than
definitely.
I do.
Yeah, in a different way, definitely.
Totally different
yeah.
way.
Hence Kev.
You know, prior to being introduced to the drug court model in 2004 as a participant, I spent, you know, maybe 10 or so years in active addiction and in and out of the legal system. And the big difference for me and what really worked for me personally and is working in drug courts all across America is the therapeutic approach that the drug court team takes with their participants. And with me personally, I've responded so much differently and so much more positively when instead of someone telling me what to do and how to do it and when to do it, folks that had been there that could show me how to do things and then tap into my own self-efficacy, into my own self-determination, where I started making these choices on my own. And that's what we tried to do at Drug Court. Through my experience with 12-step recovery, there's one spiritual principle that we can't generate on our own, and that's hope. And when I bought into Drug Court and when I bought into 12-step recovery, that's what I got from them, was that sense of hope. And, hey, I can do this. My life can get better. And it has, just for today. And what we try to do at Warrick County is lead our participants by example. Like Lisa and Judge Meyer were saying, we have folks on our staff that are in recovery, that practice recovery on a daily basis. We have our frontline staff, our licensed master's level social workers. We are fully engaged in our participants' lives in every aspect on every day. So
it's definitely a we program, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, addiction is a we problem.
Yeah, good point. Yes. Yeah.
But, I'm very proud of Kevin, not only for being able to deal with his addiction, but I'm very proud of the job that he's done as director. And he has had a baptism by fire. He's taken it on the chin a bunch of times. But, he gets back up and he marches forward and he keeps a positive attitude.
Yeah.
And I truly admire that.
Well, it's so great to go to a job where you feel you want to be there, mm-hmm. right? It's part of something good and bigger than us.
It's a sense of making a difference. And in Warrick County, we are making a difference. Our participants are being reunited with their kids and their parents and their husbands and their wives. They're back out in the workforce
yeah.
as productive taxpaying citizens of Warrick County and Vandenberg County.
And you have a judge that's trying to keep them out of prison instead
absolutely.
Of in prison. So you feel like you're working with somebody, not against them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, Judge, a lot of the questions that have come in here over time is why such a disparity? Why are the white people responding and going to treatment and a lot of black people still going to prison? And I hear that a lot, and that's one of Marvelline's big things is we've got to get the word out that this is a sickness, not a sin, to everybody.
Yeah, it is not a black, white,
no.
black, yellow, green, whatever the color is. It is a global problem,
mm-hmm.
and it knows no race, it knows no creed, it knows no sexual orientation, it knows no difference of gender, religion, what
yeah.
have you. It is an illness.
But do you think we still have work to do to getting to our minorities and being a little more tolerant of their culture and understanding the way they the language they have to respond to? Because
absolutely, and we try to treat everyone in Drug Court individually.
I think you do,
and you have to.
It's the process of getting into Drug Court. You got. At least I see that more in the urban areas, maybe not there. It's if they don't have the right attorney or the right push, sometimes they're kind of left in the background. Maybe it's not that way so much in Warrick County, though.
I think maybe at one time it was, originally when the program first started up.
Mm-hmm.
No one really knew what to do with it.
Right.
What is this? What do we do with it?
Yeah.
And I think everyone in the system now understands it.
Well, your minority in Warrick County is more the young population. They're the ones that are
yeah.
the minority.
Yeah.
the teenagers and young adults.
And the yes, and there is significant there are significant differences in trying to deal with them.
Yeah.
Than the older
different language.
People.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had people everywhere from age 18 up into their 60s in drug court.
Right.
And our experience has been it tends to be easier to deal with a person in their 40s and older mm-hmm. than it is 40 and under, and especially under age 25.
Yeah.
And some of that is developmental because your brain has not matured, developed to its full potential
right.
until your mid-20s. And
Hopefully.
And, of course, if you've had some years of addiction, that seems to retard mm-hmm. that brain development and maybe somewhat permanently. But it certainly delays it because we've had people in the program that are in their late 30s and have actively used for 20 years, and they act like an 18-year-old. It's like when they started using drugs, their maturation physically and mentally has just kind of stopped.
Right.
And so, you know, it's kind of difficult to deal with a 38-year-old who has an
impulse control of an 18-year-old.
The impulse control of an 18-year-old, although intellectually they may be
pretty savvy, usually.
Pretty savvy, correct.
That's why your job is so complex. There's so many layers.
There are. And
it's got to be individualized.
With a new participant, it's like the onion. You peel it off layer by layer.
Yeah.
And you get down to the good part in the middle. And
yeah. You know, Verdosky Miller's been on here a couple times, and he says he loves that the criminal justice system is now willing to see that this is a disease and that people have addictions and mental illness until they relapse. And that's his big thing. It's like, okay, now the system at least sees that people are sick, and we're going to try to help them get better so they don't commit crimes, but what about when they relapse? Then you're back to being a criminal again. Is that
some approach to relapse as well at Ward County Drug Court. Unfortunately, the safest place for our participants when they relapse is the security center for a few days and until we figure out what's the next approach that we can take with our folks. Unfortunately, relapse is a part of it, you know, just like a part of any other chronic illness, you know. And what I really like about our program is most of our folks, whether they when they do relapse that day, once we get to talk to them, they're willing to pick themselves back up and move forward.
And jail in that context is not a punishment. It's not intended as a punishment. Mm-hmm. It's we use it to protect the person from themselves. We've got to get them out of their environment mm-hmm. as quickly as we can and get them to a relatively safe place. And jail is not necessarily the best option, but it is something that we can do on a short-term basis. We would prefer to have a therapeutic mm-hmm. place to put them in.
You have before put them in Stepping Stone First or
correct
one of the
YWCA,
right,
Brentwood,
Deaconess Crosspoint,
yeah, the facilities that do inpatient. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I would very much like to have is a housing facility where we can put people on a short-term basis, not only for that reason, but also, you know, I see people coming in that are in the criminal justice system that are really addicts, and they would benefit greatly from a drug court program, but they're homeless.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do not like to send a person to prison just because they're homeless when you've got a drug court option, but homelessness and drug court don't really fit together well. And mm-hmm. if we had a place where we could house these people for a while until they can get clean and get employment again and get their own place to live.
Does Ward County have anything right now like that?
No.
I don't think so. You were working on it at one time.
I've been working on it for a long time, but making it happen is difficult. You know, it's a money issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, these sober living homes are becoming big everywhere now, and it's going back to the recovering people running them because of money.
Right.
And those are springing up all over. You know, Henderson's got the Warm Center, and it's managed bottom up.
You know, Judge Meyer raised an interesting point. Homelessness, even in Warwick County, is becoming more and more of an issue that's going to need to be addressed. Many of our applicants come to us homeless, either in jail or they're couch surfing. And, you know, from a social work background, we know that Maslow and his hierarchy of needs, that homelessness is right down there with the safety. And you know, think about that. You know, housing is everything.
And you can't talk to people about self-esteem if they don't know where they're sleeping.
Right, if they don't know where they're sleeping and they're walking in with a bag of clothes and say, hey, you know, help me out. And
God, Kit,
that's something that's something that we're going to have to continue to work on.
Right.
In Warwick County.
Mm-hmm. Addiction takes you to the streets, no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I like the way you two talked about, you didn't say jail, you said security center. Mm-hmm. Just that word connotes compassion. It's the jail, but you're looking at it as a security an intervention of security.
Well, the jail, or if you talk, it denotes to folks corrections or punishment, you did something wrong, so we're going to sit you here and we'll decide what we'll do with you later. No, that's not the approach we take as a team. It's a therapeutic approach to with all of our folks.
Before break, Judge, what made you, what do you think shaped you and made you want to be more like, lack of a better word, clinically involved with these folks that come to your bench? Because it'd be a lot easier to just sentence people and send them on their way.
Boy, that's an understatement. It would be so much easier.
Your wife would be happier. Your kids would be happier.
But I have to live with my conscience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my parents always told me, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And you know, try to make this a better place, and that's what I'm trying to do. Plus, one of my family members, my uncle, who is deceased, had a terrible alcohol problem, and I was around him as a child. Of course, my experience with him is he was, I guess, what you call the happy drunk, and I knew that he had an alcohol problem, but at a young age, you really don't appreciate what that's all about.
Mm-hmm.
But as I got older, and you know, I reflected back. By the time I had gotten older, he had gotten into AA, and I believe maybe started the first AA in Vandenberg County.
Yeah, Columbia and Linwood was.
Yeah. And he was in AA for years until he died.
Yes, he was, and one of those that went almost daily, Harold Meyer. Everybody from the old days remembers Harold. He was quite a contribution to Alcoholics Anonymous. So, yeah, even the judge has been touched personally by it as well. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We've got to take a break for our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Did you know drug and or alcohol problems are one of the major reasons why people lose their jobs, their health, and even their families? Don't let this happen to you. There is help, real help. Brentwood Meadows is here. At Brentwood Meadows, we provide compassionate, professional, effective treatment. Our goal is to help get you back feeling healthy and happy once again. Call us today at 812-858-7200 for a free evaluation. This may be one of the most important calls you'll ever make.
If you are suffering from depression or anxiety, please listen to this important message. You are not alone, and there is help, real help. Brentwood Meadows is here. Brentwood Meadows is a new state-of-the-art facility located in a private setting in Newburgh, Indiana. At Brentwood Meadows, we understand that feelings of anxiety, loss of control, loneliness, fear, and confusion affect your life and the lives of those around you. Take control. Call Brentwood Meadows for a free, no-obligation evaluation. Call 812-858-7200.
There are nearly 1 million smokers in Indiana who say they want to quit. Well, the good news is there's never been a better time to quit.
If you are ready to quit, there is help. The Quit Now Indiana contest is a statewide promotion to encourage Hoosiers to quit now. This is your opportunity to quit smoking.
And just maybe win the grand prize of $2,500.
Go to quitnowindiana.com and join the thousands of people who have entered to quit smoking.
Are you ready to quit? Enter now, and you'll have a chance to win one of three cash prizes.
To be eligible, you must be an Indiana resident and enter by September 30th, 2012.
Remember, quit now and win big.
$2,500. Get contest details at quitnowindiana.com.
There's never been a better time to quit.
Indianapolis will be off the chain Friday, October 5th and Saturday, October 6th for the Circle City Classic HBCU Weekend. Friday night kicks off with the Classic Cabaret Concert starring Charlie Wilson.
My name is Charlie.
Plus Avant. And the SOS Band, or Get Your Laugh On, at the Classic Comedy Show featuring D.L. Hughley and Earthquake. Then Saturday morning, October 6th at 10 a.m., we kick things off with the over 100,000 fans checking out the Circle City Classic Parade, followed by the Circle City Classic Tailgate Party. Then get ready for the 29th annual Circle City Classic Football Game at 2:30 inside Lucas Oil Stadium. It's the Bulldogs of South Carolina State U versus the Eagles of North Carolina Central U at their first Circle City Classic. It's the HBCU experience for the whole family. Tickets as low as $10. For hotel and tickets, call 317-237-5222 or log on to CircleCityClassic.com or Ticketmaster.com.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, a dynamic program for those who have been touched by alcohol and or substance abuse. Our lines are always open, so pick up the phone right now and call into the program at 424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab is brought to you by Brentwood Meadows. Brentwood Meadows, there's hope, there's help. And now, here's Lisa.
Meyer and Kevin from Warrick County Drunk Driving Drug Court Program, and Kevin sharing about his experience, strength, and hope. This just goes way too fast, but we did get a couple of questions in writing to us. Thank you, listeners, for writing in with your ideas and questions, and I wanted to ask the judge and Kevin this one. Have you seen people in your program or people that have alcoholism and addictive disorders that don't drink and drug every day? This writer says this woman doesn't think she has a problem because she can quit. You know, she doesn't have to have a drink all the time, but when she wants to drink, she drinks. And her friends, her family all think she has a problem, but she thinks she doesn't because she doesn't have to do it all the time. She deserves it after a hard day's work.
Well, you know, that's a classic situation that we see with many folks when they come in. And many of the techniques that I've learned and also we use at the Warrick Drug Court is a motivational interviewing. And it sounds like this young lady is there and she's ambivalent to whether she has a problem or, well, I can drink, you know, on Saturdays and Sundays, but Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday I go to work. And I would ask her to take an honest look of, one, how it's affecting her, and two, well, if you don't have to drink, why do you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and number three, how's it affecting your interaction with your kids? How's it affecting the interaction with your employer? How's it affecting the interaction with your family? And it sounds like family think she has some issues, and I would also want to know why. Why does family think that?
If something creates problems, it could be a problem.
Absolutely.
Huh?
It sounds as though there's much more to that going on.
And so, you see that. I know when people get interviewed with the Drug Court Program, and Judge, you probably hear it from the bench a lot. I only had two. You know, I don't get drunk, or it's just beer.
Or it's my first time.
Yeah. So you get a lot of that minimizing.
Oh yeah. I'm always amazed when these young people are standing in front of me for a minor consumption. And they're telling me it was the first time. And I'm telling them, how unlucky can you actually be to drink one time in your life and get caught?
Yeah, that's pretty unlucky. Huh?
And, you know, you loosen them up a little bit with that, and they'll tell you the real story.
Yeah.
But, you know, going back to the question here, it sounds like maybe a little bit of binge drinking, and what we've experienced in drug court from the alcoholics is they think, well, if you don't drink all week and you just drink on the weekends, you can't be an alcoholic.
Not hurting anybody.
Again, when I was growing up, my mother had a good friend who was a nanny for a young girl about my age then, and her mother had died and her father had hired the nanny. And part of the reason why is the father had a very good job, and he worked very hard Monday through Friday, came home on Friday night, and I didn't see him again until Monday morning. Mm-hmm. And he would be upstairs just totally drunk.
Weekend warrior.
A weekend warrior, the binge drinker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so many people that do that think that they're really, that they don't have an issue, but in effect they do.
So, yes, so your answer to this question is absolutely they could have a problem with alcohol, even though they think they can control the quantity and frequency.
I'm not a clinician, but from experience, yes, they could have a problem with alcohol.
Absolutely.
And it would behoove them to at least talk to someone who knows and get their feedback.
Yeah, abnormal. Normal drinkers don't usually hide a six pack behind the commode, do they? In the water, that's pretty abnormal.
Usually not.
But yeah.
Well, not of age. Maybe if you're a teenager, you might try that.
Parents
won't look there.
That's right. And here's the second question: can you tell when somebody's sincere about wanting to stop using drugs or drinking?
I can.
Yeah.
I can.
You have good radar for that.
Well, if you engage them in a conversation, and again, I'm not a clinician on this, but I've had a lot of training about addiction and all of the aspects of that, and I'm pretty good at spotting the signals. Mm-hmm. And if you can get them engaged in a conversation, and, you know, it's tough, I think, for a lot of these people. They're sitting out there. Some of them have handcuffs on. Some of them don't. But I'm sitting up on this bench above them with this black robe, and they see the gavel there. And, you know, they know where they're at, and they're a little reticent to talk under those circumstances. So, you know, you have to approach them in such a way that they are comfortable with you. So they will tell you. And I'm amazed at some of the things that these people tell me.
I know. I've been amazed, too.
But if they understand I'm not there to hurt them,
exactly,
then they'll open up. And some of them do understand that they need help. But, mm-hmm. You know, it's so much easier to stay addicted than it is to get clean.
Yeah.
And you know, they're crying on the inside, hey, you know, help me, help me, help me. But they don't know how, and they're not in contact with people who can or even care to help them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And we had a young lady in drug court that just came in not too long ago. And, you know, I wasn't real nice with her as the defendant in the case, but I wasn't nice because I needed to get her attention. Mm-hmm. And she was very grateful. You know, I have these people come back to me and tell me thanks for being rough with me because,
right,
you know, it did make a difference.
Yeah, they'll
and
thank
of course
you after.
They'll scream and fight you all the way, you know.
Kind of like going to the dentist.
It is. It is, but it sure feels better when it's done.
Right, exactly. Can you tell, Kevin, when people are being pretty honest with you and when they're
I can absolutely tell if someone's being sincere. I think it even transcends being a clinician. I think it's just part of the human condition. When you're actively engaged in a conversation, you have an intuition with someone, and you're actively listening, taking an empathetic approach to what they're saying to you and contributing to the conversation too. You can tell when someone's being sincere, and they can tell when I'm being sincere with them too. So they can flesh that out too. Mm-hmm. And something that a comment that Judge Meyer had just made as well about getting clean is the easy part. And what we try to tell our folks, especially in that hyper-intense phase one of our program, that the getting clean, let's get clean, and we tell our folks, hey, we're just asking you to change everything.
Right.
But just not today.
Yeah.
Okay, let's work on getting clean. Let's work on checking in today. And what we know about addiction and what we know about 12-step recovery is that you do have to change everything if you're going to get some long-lasting effects and some real work in recovery. Is that you've got to change everything that you're doing.
Yeah, just when you think I'm there, you got to go give it to other people. Got to keep passing it on.
And you know, getting clean is the easy part. It's that finding a new way to live that we work on every day. Because it's not something like picking up a dollar bill on the side of the road.
Right.
It's something that when we get up every morning, we find a
new pain. And that's not easy when you don't have an addiction. But when you have an addiction, it's got to make the process significantly more difficult.
And you know, Judge, I love that about the judge, because you've really appreciated the challenge of recovery, and you've helped other judges, prosecutors, attorneys understand how, by God, you try to change everything in your life, your wife, your home, your job, you've really challenged everybody to think this isn't easy, and it isn't.
It isn't,
yeah.
And not being addicted like that, it's hard for me to, I can understand it, but do I really appreciate it? Mm-hmm. You know, I think you have to be there to appreciate it. But the analogy that I've given on several occasions is, you know, just I challenge you not to have a drink of any substance, water, juice, whatever it is. Don't take a drink for the rest of the day and tell me how you're feeling about 10 o'clock tonight.
Right.
Well, that's kind of the addict or the alcoholic staying away. I mean, yeah, it's easy for maybe an hour or two, mm-hmm. you know, then you start getting the thirst and then your brain starts working and, you know, you get all these
weird
thoughts.
And
so it's got to be a tremendous challenge, and I do admire anybody that can get through it.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that sensitivity. Is there anything you all want to say in closing?
Well, I just think that is a, you know, the whole challenge of recovery, how difficult it can be on a participant, is why that, you know, our program in Ward County is unique. We have folks on our team that are in recovery, and we bring that to the table in our team meetings, and our decisions in conjunctions with our participants are based in that. We are so looking forward to the future of the Ward County Drug Court, making the communities and the streets and the participants and the citizens of Ward County proud of the program, and the community safer and drug-free.
And, you know, I want to thank you, Lisa, for having this show. I don't know of any other shows like this, and there need to be. But if any of you listening have a loved one or a friend or, you know, someone you care about that you think or you know has an addiction problem, if there would be some way that you could get them to listen to Lisa's show, you know, mm-hmm. you never know what's going to register with someone. And if they can listen to it, it might turn the light on. And if it doesn't, then try something else.
Right.
But it's good. I know a lot of people that are in recovery listen to the show. What I really like to know is how many people that are addicted and not in recovery that are listening to the show. And those are the people we need to get to listen to the show. But they're not going to just tune in. You know, it's going to have to come from their family, their friends, to get them to listen and get into treatment, for heaven's sake. We've got such good treatment in this area, mm-hmm. and there's no reason not to.
And drug court is a treatment court.
It is, absolutely.
So, well, thank you both for coming, always being available, and being excited about this thing called recovery, and sharing it with us this hour. Thanks. Love
you
both.
Lisa.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
No more announcements, except don't forget, on October 6th, we start from 10 to 11. This has been a great hour. If any of you have comments, concerns, don't hesitate to call here or Facebook us or write us, and we will get to your concerns. And don't forget, between now and next Saturday, to do the next right thing.